In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball. Let's
all go to the lobby. Yes, indeed, it is time to talk movies. Pass the Popcorn is brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, where they have a film for everyone in the family. 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor and the Bangor Drive-In. Alan Adams from The Main Edge in studio with us. Good day, Mr. Adams.
Good day to you, sir. How's it going?
Outstanding. How was your weekend?
It was pretty good. Pretty good. A little weird. My lovely bride went down to Cherryfield, down east, to visit with an old friend of hers from back in the day, was up with her family, and so went down to visit with her, and I did not go. And so we actually spent an evening apart, which is not something that that I'm particularly used to. I slept like garbage, made far too much coffee in the morning, and legitimately yelled at her to come see something on the internet,
even though she was
not in the house. Wow. Yeah, I got it bad, man. I've lost what little ability I had to function as a solo unit at this point. So it's just like, thank God I found her, because otherwise I'd be wandering around. You know, we'd be putting newspapers down.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. How did Stella adjust to this?
She did okay. I think she, you know, every once in a while I'd catch a little bit of side eye with the implication being, what did you do? Where is she? What did you say? Fix it.
Yeah. This better not last more than another day, or there are going to be some surprises left for you.
Yep.
And in all that, you managed to get to the movies. You found your way out of the house.
I did.
You got to the theater, and you saw a couple. Where do we begin this week?
Okay, so we're going to start with The Nut Job 2.
And I have to confess, I didn't know there was a Nut Job 1.
Well, and here's the thing. There are, you know, as moviegoers, we all kind of have our own sort of individual quirks as far as the sorts of things we find enjoyable when we go to the movies. Everybody's got their own sort of unique, their unique things. As someone who goes to the movies a lot, I've determined that I have certain eccentricities in things that I like that don't necessarily make a lot of sense. This movie, Nut Job 2, brings together two of those things.
Talking squirrels?
Well, no. One, middle of the road animated fare for children, like not Pixar and not the bottom of the barrel stuff, but the, you know, that stuff in the middle that,
yeah.
Good enough to keep the kids occupied for an hour and a half, with Netflix, you know, in the back of a minivan or something. I have an affinity for those sorts of movies. In addition, I have a weird thing about seeing the sequels to movies I didn't see. And since this is very much middle of the road children's fare, and I did not see the original Nut Job, the Venn diagram, the overlap is there.
Perfect.
And so, full disclosure, I enjoyed this movie more than most people would, and certainly more than I can reasonably recommend going forward, because it's not a good movie. Like, it's not a movie that you would call good by any stretch of the imagination. But I enjoyed myself.
And you weren't lost by not seeing the original.
Well, it took me a second. You know, I mean, the narrative complexities of the original Nut Job were basically taken care of in the first 30 seconds of this new movie. My understanding is the first movie was about a squirrel who leads some sort of nut heist. a nut shop like goes out of business, and so the squirrel leaves the park to get to the apparently unsold nuts that are in the basement. So the Nut Job 2 picks up where that first movie left off. All the critters from the park are living in the basement of this closed nut shop, eating nuts. Doing nut stuff.
So it's pretty easy to get caught up to.
Yeah, and then it's like, okay, so this is the deal. The lead squirrel is named Surly. Surly the squirrel, voiced by Will Arnett, who's basically, who's going full Job Bluth. Like, it's basically Job except as a squirrel and slightly more competent. But he and his mute rat buddy named Buddy are they kind of are running the show in this nutshot basement. Meanwhile, there's another squirrel voiced by Katherine Heigl who's still out in the park, like, you know, wanting to stay, you know, stay wild and stay like as a squirrel, so scrounging and digging up nuts and storing them for winter and the whole shebang. As you might imagine, Surly doesn't have a whole lot of use for that sort of thing because he's got a basement full of nuts. Until he doesn't.
Uh oh.
Like, spoiler alert, the nut shop goes away. And so they're forced back to the park, only to discover that the mayor of the city, voiced by Bobby Moynihan, he's literally not called anything but the mayor, who is this weirdly cartoonish condemnation of capitalism. That's a whole other thing. But he decides that he wants to build a horribly unsafe amusement park in the actual park. And so the squirrels and rats and other assorted critters must come together in an effort to thwart the mayor's sinister plan to build an amusement park in this park.
It's quite the tale.
It's something else. there's also a pug named Precious, voiced by Maya Rudolph. I imagine that has something to do with the first movie that I just don't understand, but that's fine. There's a pug. I get it. In other news, there's also an adorable white mouse named Mr. Feng, voiced by Jackie Chan, who leads a gigantic army of adorable white mice, all of whom know kung fu, because of course they do.
Sure.
And that's basically how it goes.
And you enjoyed it.
I was delighted. I'm not gonna lie. Like. There are a lot of really, like, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit as far as the gags are concerned. You know, it's got this sort of, like, shoddy, like, second-rate Looney Tunes aesthetic to it. But, you know, if you're like me, maybe you didn't know that you wanted to see a hazmat suit full of animated mice do karate. It turns out that I did.
You've
I did
been waiting
wanna,
your whole
I,
life.
I yeah. wanted to see that, and yeah. then I got the opportunity. Nice. So yeah, I mean, the nut job too. Like, it's the nut job too. It's not like you don't know what you're getting into right. when you go in. And in those terms, I think it's perfectly acceptable. It's not. It's certainly not the spectacular achievement that you get with Pixar or Disney or some of those other outfits. But you know, it's not. You know, you're not going to feel bad about showing it to your kids.
Well, like, there you go.
You know, it doesn't. You know, it doesn't insult their intelligence. It just, you know, kind of settles in and it feels free to wallow in the lowest common denominator just a little bit.
Nothing wrong with that.
That's right.
Time. All right. So much for the nut job, too. How about the Glass Castle?
Yeah, it's the Glass Castle, based on a true story. Jeanette Walls is the woman's name. She wrote this memoir, also titled The Glass Castle, came out back in 2005. And it's the story, basically the story of her life, of being raised by these sort of nonconformist nomadic parents who sort of wandered hither and yon, you know, squatting in various places, and raising her and her siblings. She had an older sister and then a younger brother and a younger sister, and raising them with that same sort of sensibility, that sort of, you know, you're special, like society, you know, the society is a lie, is a trick. Like, this is, you know, you have to be true to yourself and et cetera, which is, you know, probably pretty, which is pretty compelling when you're a kid. But when you grow up and you realize that maybe you want flushing toilets, that changes the dynamics significantly. But the movie starts, Jeanette is, she's played by Brie Larson, who's great in this movie. It's 1989. She's an adult. She's living in New York City. She's engaged to a financial analyst, and she is she writes a gossip column for one of the New York papers. She's doing very well. She's very successful. She's at dinner with her fiance. She ends up catching a cab to go home, and as she's going home, she sees these two people digging through the trash, and there's this whole thing where, you know, there's this look of recognition, but it's not clear what the deal is. Come to find out, those people digging through the trash are her parents. And so basically what happens from there is we kind of jump back and forth between her childhood and the quote unquote present day, which is late 80s, early 90s. And we watch as this relationship dynamic plays out. Her dad is this sort of, he's a drunk, but he's also kind of a polymath of sorts, like very intelligent guy. But unstable in some pretty significant ways, played by Woody Harrelson. Her mom, Rose Marie, is an artist who's committed to the idea of creativity above all else, played by Naomi Watts. And so we get to see, and we sort of bounce back and forth in time, the relationship that she has with her parents as they grow up, as they're moving from place to place, from town to town, to all these, like, you know, cold water flats, or, you know, these places that don't have power, or don't have heat, or don't have, you know, what have you. And then, you know, you're moving to this, you know, sort of glamorous life in New York City, where she's still forced to deal with the fact that her parents are who they are. You know, her siblings have all moved to New York City. They're all still together. They're a very tight unit, but still very much dealing with the aftermath of this, you know, unusual childhood situation. But as, you know, as the, you know, you move back and forth, you see as these kids grow, they start to realize that, you know, all the, you know, this weird manic energy that makes their dad so fun when they're, you know, 6 and 7 and 8 years old, everything's an adventure. When you're 12, 13, 14, you know, you start thinking it might be nice to go to school. You know, it might be nice to, you know, sleep in a bed, you know, and it winds up coming together when they move back to their dad's hometown in West Virginia. But that opens up a whole different can of worms, you know, the familial, you know, dynamic, the complexity of that is rendered even more stark when you meet his parents and, you know, you start to see where some of this stuff is springing from and this and that. It's really a very, very compelling story. It's the kind of story that I think would almost feel like too much if you didn't already know that it was true. The performances are excellent. Brie Larson is so good. Yeah, like she's great. And she's particularly good at portraying the emotions that come with skewed relationship dynamics, I think. You know, she did that, and she did that so beautifully in Room. Like, she's just really got a wonderful knack for those kinds of, for portraying that kind of damage in a way that's not, that doesn't exploit, that feels very genuine and real. And she does that here. You know, Woody Harrelson is all, you know, bluster and bombast, and, you know, he's got this really weird, wide-eyed energy. And he brings, it's easy to forget, just because he's, you know, he's so hit or miss with the choices that he makes. Like, Woody Harrelson has such a charismatic screen presence. Like, it's easy to forget that. And when he turns that on, it's just like, oh, right, you're incredibly talented. And it's just nice to kind of see that, a flash of that. Naomi Watts is wonderful. All the kids who play the younger versions of all these siblings. We've talked about this before, how, you know, there's a sort of child actor hamminess that can come across sometimes. Mm. There's zero of that, which is really nice, because that would largely negate the impact, I think, of a lot of these performances. The biggest issue that this movie has, and it's a big one, is the fact that the movie struggles to decide how it wants us to feel about these parents. They are not good parents. Mm. And they're not necessarily bad people, but they're people who consistently make terrible decisions. Decisions that are self-serving, that are selfish, in ways that impact their children negatively, and they don't necessarily see that. They don't understand that. And so it's difficult to find that, you know, find a way in as far as like finding any sort of empathy for them. And especially when, you know, the ultimate idea is you assume there's going to be some sort of redemptive arc. But they commit so wholeheartedly to creating these people that are broken in this way that it's hard to come back from, you know, and so, you know, the forward progress that happens in some ways feels a little disingenuous, a little bit forced. But again, the simple truth is, like, it actually happened that way. Right. So regardless of how it feels to me, like, that's the story that was told. And granted, you don't know how much license was taken to make it more cinematic in terms of the narrative. I'm not familiar with the book, so I can't speak to that. But that being said, like, it's a flawed movie, sure, but there are some really great performances, you know, it's beautifully made. Like, it's got a great look, and it's not a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination, but it's certainly one well worth seeing.
Glass Castle. Alan Adams talking movies. It's Past the Popcorn, brought to you every week at this time by our friends at Bangor Mall Cinema 10.